All right. Shishi of Toldos. We're in a difficult parsha here. This is a very difficult episode in the Torah to fully understand. It's one that the commentaries have written about at length, and many have been challenged by and have worked to try to understand. And we spent some time talking about this last year, and we'll make some brief references to what we said then. But essentially, this Aliyah, Shishi, is the second half of the story from last year, from Chamishi, where you read about, essentially, this whole plot that is devised by Rivka and that Yaakov goes along with to apparently deceive Yitzchak into giving him the brachos rather than Esav. And this Aliyah is the bracha itself. So we spent some time last year. It can be a reference to the YU Torah recordings from last year if you'd like to review that. Talking about some of the ideas that are written about this whole episode, certainly a challenging episode. I will mention Rav Shlomo Paul Hirsch specifically has the whole introduction where he says we have to be very careful. Essentially, we're not apologists. We're not here just to say that everything is right. Clearly, there is something here that seems to be very deceptive and challenging, but at the same time, we have to understand it in its proper context. So he has a whole hakdama, which we'll refer back to, so I'll just mention it here. Essentially, he says, first of all, Yaakov is completely innocent because he is coming from Rivka. This is all Rivka's instruction. He goes on to say, actually not completely innocent, because if it's simply about kibbutzim, so we know that that doesn't necessarily justify averus or misbehavior. So that he does have a shtickle, an observation about. But essentially says the main actor here is really Rivka. It's Yaakov who's following Rivka. The truth is, one could also note that it's not just necessarily about kibbutzim if he's following Rivka. It's also about Rivka as a neviah that he's following her, which is an additional element. But in any event, that's what he notes. And then he says, okay, so we have to understand what was Rivka doing. And he has a little bit of a hesber there, which we'll refer back to in a few minutes, where he suggests that Rivka's whole plan was really to expose Esav and to help Yitzchak to understand just how he's basically being bamboozled by him. And that therefore, this was a relatively transparent masquerade. You know, to have Yaakov come in there wearing a costume of Esav, you can only imagine Yitzchak couldn't really see him, but you could imagine if this was a visual experience, this is like somebody wearing a big Groucho Marx mask and pretending to be Groucho Marx. It's the kind of thing that most people would probably perceive right away. And the point being, that's how Rav Hirsch basically presents it, and that the point being would be that Yitzchak would then realize, wow, look how easily I've been taken in. Maybe Esav is also pulling a con on me, and that would be essentially the realization that would come from this, and that was the nature of the plan. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu had interests here also, had intents here also, as we're going to spell out in a moment. But in any event, that's the framing that Rav Hirsch has for this episode. Again, many others have other observations, but just mentioning that as an example of one, because that's really the theme of last year's Aliyah. Now we're going to focus on the actual episode now with the bracha itself. Noah.
Two questions. One, couldn't we say that Yaakov is guilty, even if his excuse was, I was just following orders from my mother, that like he still carried out this deceptive act?
Well, yeah, but that, so Rav Hirsch does allude to that a little bit, saying that kibud aim does not really justify that. There are limits to kibud av aim. So this is from a pure halachic perspective that doesn't really answer all the questions. So he does acknowledge that. And again, I would maybe add to that the question is he doing it only mishum kibud aim, or because also he's perceiving that there is essentially a message from on high here, which maybe is a different level. But in any event, you're right that Hirsch does note that it's not a full justification, but it says, just in terms of understanding what's going on here, it's clear that this is not Yaakov's plan. This is Rivka's plan. And so the one whose motives we have to figure out and who we have to understand is really Rivka.
Also, isn't it a little, I it's strange that Rivka is kind of betraying her other son in defense of Yaakov.
So that's something we'll talk about it a little more. It comes up later in this Aliyah. But it's difficult when we talk about betraying, because I think something like this came up in our ethics class yesterday. I don't know if anyone in the room is in that class. It came up yesterday, the question of telling on somebody who's cheating and the like. So, we have different levels of loyalties and obligations. So if your best friend is cheating and you're going to get him in huge trouble by turning him in, so on some level, are you betraying that relationship? Yes, but you're doing so because you feel there's a higher level of obligation. So clearly that's what Rivka feels here also, that yes, she would like to make Esav happy, but she doesn't think that that's in the interests of Klal Yisrael, the all spiritual future of the Jewish people. But the fact that she realizes there's a trade-off, that's part of what we'll see if Herschel comment a little bit later on. Okay, so let's look at the Aliyah itself, but only just get really one letter into it, because the Aliyah itself kind of really starts in the middle of the story. It's a little bit of an unusual place for there to be a break. And so now the bracha itself is contained in this Aliyah. So it starts off, Vayitem l'cha ha'elokim itala shamayim mishmane ha'aretz v'rov dagav v'zirosh. So it's talking about one letter. So the Chazal have a comment, Yerushalmi and Masechet Brachos, that the brachos that were given to Avram to pass on to the generations are being passed on here now to Yaakov. So this is a little synergy, because it was just last week in Shishi of Chayisara that we heard about these brachos being given to Avram to pass on to the generations. So here is the next part of that story. Again, this Aliyah synergy we've been noticing this year. So it's a Shishi to Shishi synergy. But where you see that here, so the Torah Tamima has a comment that is probably from the fact that the Aliyah starts with a Vav, because this is how kids talk sometimes, they'll start the story. So then I went and did this, they start with a so and the end, and it's in the middle of the sentence, and it's the beginning of the sentence. So here, this is why I start with a Vav. So the Torah Tamima suggests that the Vav is to indicate that even though this is a new line, but it's to connect back to the previous brachos of Avram. And again, all the brachos that Avram is given for his descendants are transmitted here. And there's a lot of symbolism that is found in this. And the Vilna Gaon has a comment that, in his commentary to the Haggadah in Chagadja, which is also clearly greatly allegorical, that all of the good things that happen to the Jews throughout the generations is because of these brachos. And that's, again, a theme that we will return to. So this reference of Mitah HaShamayim, the dew of the sky, so we're going to find very similar language later on in the Aliyah when Esav gets the bracha straight out. So apparently this phrase about the Tah HaShamayim is something that's said both to Yaakov, disguised as Esav, and to Esav. But there is a key difference in language, that here it says, V'yitain l'cha elokim. And the Mefarshim point out that the idea that's being highlighted here is that Yaakov will perceive that it's from God, and that's the key difference between them. He's not just going to see this as natural good fortune, but he'll see this as something that comes from God. And the Rashi of Karav Yavner, Goldbach, son of Racha, has a whole essay about this, where he compares this in the reverse to the idea of a nachash, that the klala of a nachash is that, among other things, he eats the dirt. And that's not such a klala, really, because your food is always available. And there's many who comment about this, that the nature of the klala of a nachash is that he has no relationship with God, that he has everything just there, all his food is available. So it's like God saying here, take a lifetime supply of food, I don't want to ever hear from you again. As opposed to the Jews, we find many iterations of the idea, such as the man falling on a daily basis in the Midbar and elsewhere, that the nature of the relationship is that we need to constantly turn to God, which is a good thing. So you find this kind of imagery here also. Rashi's comments that you will get it when you ask for it, you will get it, you'll get it again, that there's kind of a constant connection, essentially. This represents the inverse of the nachash relationship, and that's the difference, that v'yitein l'cha elokim mital hashamayim, as opposed to what Esav gets. Now, this idea of Eitim Lecha, we recognize it maybe not so much from Chumash, but from Motzi Shabbos. Right? There's a minig to recite this Motzi Shabbos. The Zohar says that there's a minig to say this on Motzi Shabbos. And there are many different interpretations. Tzadok HaKohen in his Pri Tzadik, he says that since everything we eat on Shabbos is Kodesh, even if we're not always constantly focused on that, but the reality is everything that we eat on Shabbos is Kodesh, so therefore we want that Kedusha to also characterize whatever we do during the week, when we don't necessarily have that automatic connection. And the Likutei Maharif has the suggestion that this is meant to parallel what we find in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yutes and Beis, which is the inspiration for Shalom Aleichem, and the idea that two angels follow us home Friday night and they want to make sure everything is being done properly, and there's a good angel and a bad angel, and if everything's done properly, the good angel is happy with us, and everything is not done properly, the bad angel is not happy with us, the bad angel is makatri against us, and they eventually leave. So when do they leave? We say Tzeitzchem L'Sholom. When do they leave? So in the Machzah Shekel, the Arachai and the Magen Avram quotes this idea in Reish Lamed Beis. So in the Machzah Shekel, says they actually leave Motzi Shabbos. They stay the whole Shabbos. So when you're at that point in Motzi Shabbos, so you invoke this tefillah that you want, that you should have the bracha of the good angel who should tell you that this should continue up until next Shabbos when the whole thing starts again. And there is an idea also in the Sefer Matan Moshe, to take it a little further, that the bad angel, he is the Sarov Shel Esav, and the good angel is the Sarov Shel Yaakov. And we know that they fought together. Yaakov fought with the Sarov Shel Esav when Yaakov had that fateful encounter. So therefore, the idea should be that just like Yaakov held on to the Sarov Shel Esav and said, I'm not going to let you go until you acknowledge my claim to the bracha, so too, these two angels who come to our house Friday night and who leave Motzi Shabbos, there's the same kind of dynamic going on. The good angel saying to the bad angel, I compel you to agree to the brachos that are being addressed to this home, and therefore that's how the minhag came about. That you never thought of all that when you were saying this Motzi Shabbos. So there's a lot more, if you want, many more increasingly mystical interpretations. The Sefer Shilei Pinchas, which is a fascinating Sefer in general, it's the Sichos of Pinchas Friedman, who addresses things from many different dimensions, literally, and from many different angles and angels. So he has two whole essays about this minig of reciting V'yitim L'cha Motzi Shabbos, and he mentions much, much more than what I just mentioned to you. So in any event, to go back to the pasuk itself, so the Aznayim L'Torah, the Lutzke Rav, suggests that what you see in these two psukim is you see the four phases of Jewish history. That V'yitim L'cha Elokim Mital HaShamayim, so that's like the man, that's a reference to the Midbar. U'mishmane Ha'aretz, Rav Dagan V'sirosh, that's a reference to once they enter into Eretz Yisrael. Over the next pasuk, Yavducha Amim V'yishtachavu L'cha L'umim, that's a reference to the Malchus of Beis David and Beis Shlomo, the stage of royalty. And then the end of the pasuk, Orarecha Arur, that's a reference to the Golos. And the idea again that the brachos are going to be with us during all of those tkufos, that's conveyed over here. This idea of tirosh that's mentioned in the end of the first pasuk, so that's a type of wine. It's a fancy wine. The Gemara says in Yuma and Daf Pevav that the idea is zacha nasa lo rosh, lo zacha nasa rosh. Rosh is a poor person. In the Torah Tanina comments, this is about drinking responsibly, which also we saw in Shishi of Noah, keeping our themes consistent. So the idea is if somebody knows how to drink properly, so then he becomes enhanced by the experience, Nasa Rosh, the person who overdoes it, so then he loses everything, and Nasa Rosh. And the Lutzke Rav also has a comment here on this idea of Tirosh being Davka, a fancy wine that the rich people drink. This is the idea of Rov Dagon, is that that's a reference to basic bread, And the notion is that when should the rich people here have maybe a political comment, if you want to read it that way, but that when should the rich people be having the fancy wine? When most of the people have the basic necessities, then it's legitimate for them to have fancy wine. But if most people are starving, if most people are not taken care of in a basic way, so then it's not right for the rich people to be indulging in such luxurious drinks. Okay, so this next pasuk, which you already mentioned, you have Ducha Amin, that the other people will serve you. So Rav Hirsch notes here that as he thought he was talking to Esav, so he knew that Esav would need material wealth in order to impress the nations of the world. And when he goes on to say, Havei Gevir La'achecha, that you should be strong over your brothers. So here, this is not a bracha, he says, but it's a challenge. And he's saying, you should be. Here, this is your job. Go out there and be stronger. And what he's referring to is, okay, I know you're going to have material success, but Yaakov has this extra element of spirituality, and you should try to match him in that also. You should try to be equal to him. That'll really be an accomplishment if you can take your material success and also bring yourself up to the level of Yaakov. That will be something to be proud of. Okay? So then the psukim go on. Vayhi kasher kilo Yitzchak levarech es Yaakov, vayhi ach yatzo yatzo Yaakov mi'esh p'nei Yitzchak aviv ve'esav achiv ba mitzei dal. So here's this awkward moment. So Yitzchak finishes, and seems a little bit like a kind of a sitcom scenario, right? So here he leaves, and as soon as he leaves, as soon as Esav leaves, Esav shows up, right? What's going on here? He thought he just finished with Esav, and now here's Esav again. Esav comes in from his hunting. So Esav says, here, come eat from the food that you want, so that you can give me the brachos. So here, Yitzchak has to respond, V'yomer lo Yitzchak aviv, mi ata? V'yomer ani bincha v'chorcha Esav. So Yitzchak has to say to him, who are you? And he responds, I am Esav. Uh-oh. Big panic. That's what the next pasuk says. Something has gone very wrong, he realizes. So the next pasuk begins, V'yecharad Yitzchak charada gedola ad ma'ot. Vayomer mi efo hu hatzad zayed vayavili vachol mikol v'terem tavo v'archeyu gam baruch yihye. So he says, uh-oh, so who is that guy who came before you? That I have eaten from him, you gave him the bracha, he's going to be blessed. So this idea of a yecharad yitzchak charad gedola, so Chazal have a comment, it sounds like it means that he was very scared or very surprised, different interpretations of what it means. But the idea that he had a tremendous fear, so Rav Gehenim Sucha Mitachta, Rashi quotes the idea that he saw a Gehenim open up beneath him. So one sefer that suggested that that refers to the thought that he wanted, if possible, to try to reverse the bracha and give it to Esav. But that would be a mistake. And the Gemara says that when a dayan is adjudicating matters, he should feel like he has a sword dangling over his head. So too, this judgment he was about to make, he was kind of warned not to make. But Chazal also have an idea, in the Medrash, a very striking idea, that Yaakov leaves, Esav comes, and Yitzchak feels this charada. So the charada, the Medrash comments that the charada happened to him twice. He had this charada when he was almost shechted, and he has this charada now. He has this feeling at Akedas Yitzchak, and he has this feeling now. And then Medrash goes on to say, and I don't know which charada was greater, and he comes to realize this charada is greater. So what's going on here? So again, Rav Goldbach, Shiv Karen Biavna, has a whole sikha about this as well, where he explains that the common element between Akedas Yitzchak and this, that if you look to the Akedah, so the Akedah, we know that the Magon and others emphasize the theme in the Akedah, that the nature of the Nisayon was that we know that Avram was Isha Chesed. That was his famous quality, that he was a person of great kindness. And the notion of the Akedah, that finally after the Akedah, now we know that he's the Yirei Elokim, it's because the Akedah drew on the opposite quality. That here, this person who spent his whole life being so kind and compassionate to people, now is ready to shecht his own son. It's the opposite quality. But that is being brought and harnessed in the service of God. So that's the nature of the Nisayan, to see that it's not just that you are good at the personality trait that comes naturally to you, but that you can also go in the complete opposite direction when that's what God asks of you. So that's the nature of that whole Nisayan. And the Charada that Yitzchak had when he witnessed this, it's not because he was afraid of dying, as natural as that would be, but we have other sources in Chazal that said that Yitzchak was very willing to go along with this and was not afraid of dying. So the idea of the Charada is just being exposed to such a complete personality shift in someone who you know and who you think he has a dominant Mida, and then to see him acting the complete opposite way, that's a shock. That's a great surprise. So too, when it comes to Yaakov. So what's Yaakov's dominant Mida? Emes, right? Titan Emes to Yaakov. He's known as the Isha Emes. So the idea that he now has to go in a way that seems like it's the opposite of that in order to advance the causes of God's plan. So that's also something that evokes Charada. That's something that's very shocking, to see this Isha Emes all of a sudden acting in the complete opposite way. But Rashid went on to say that that's still what the Avodas Hashem required. So therefore, the people who passed these tests, Avram and Yaakov, so Gam Baruch Yeh, it's all going to work out. It's all going to reflect on them positively. And so, for example, when it comes to Avram, so all of his chasodim are now taken in a even better light, because one could have thought that was just his natural inclination. It doesn't necessarily mean he's doing that to serve God. And here we see that now everything that he does is credited that way. So too, Gam Baruch Yeh has a reference to them. And therefore, the Charada, that's on the onlookers. The ones who witness this, they are so shocked, they have the Charada. But the people themselves, the principal players, Avram and Yaakov, they're not seized by this Charada. So Kishmoe, so this Divrei Aviv, Vayitzak, Tzaka, Gedolo, Mora, Ad Ma'od, Vayomel Aviv, Baracheni, Gamani Avi. So here's an example that this idea that Esav screams with such emotional torture, realizing what has happened. So this is a part of what you find as evoking the sympathy for Esav. The idea that Esav really did get a big clap over the head here is something that you find the Chazal and the Mefarshim having a sympathy for, and you find sometimes the tzaras that we have in later generations blamed on this, and the fact that Esav was put through such a tremendous emotional anguish, and that it corresponds to Mordechai's Zakah Gedolah Omara that we read about in Megillas Esther. And that's a part of what you find, the emphasizing that there was, at the very least, a tremendous trade-off here, and not something that we can just forget about and imagine that there was no human cost. So particularly this next sentence is also a challenge. It says, Vayomer ba'achicha b'merma v'yikach b'rchasecha. So your brother came and took your bracha, he took it b'mirma. So what does mirma mean? So mirma, the Ben Ezra translates, normally means with falsehood. You came with some type of plot, some type of trickery, and took the bracha. But Unglas translates it as b'chachma, and you see the same thing with the episode with Dina and Shechem, that mirma is also translated as b'chachmasa. So Schwab has a whole little essay about this, where he says that these are people who are only invoking such tactics when they themselves have been treated in a dishonest way, and therefore it's necessary to counter dishonesty with other clever responses in the goal of bringing out the truth, in the goal of bringing out the evidence. So that's why it's appropriate to say Chachma here. If you were here last year, you may recall around Pesach time, so we gave Shir, I think I mentioned to you guys, about the practice of stealing the Afikoman. we talk about this last year?
Yeah.
Yes.
So last year, I think we talked about this, and it came out at the time very much against the approach of stealing the Afikoman and endorsing other approaches of entertaining the children with Afikoman hunts, but not having them steal it. And the concern was that this is a midara, that engage in trickery and stealing is just not something we want to teach our children. And I think I mentioned at the time also that there are some sources that actually connected to this episode, that the Afikoman is mentioned in Chazal as being a part of the story, that it was Pesach night, and Yaakov served Yitzchak the Afikoman, and therefore he couldn't have another meal because he had eaten the Afikoman. So you can see this is a mucker for the idea that any other time there's no problem having a second dinner. But after Pesach night, he's Afikoman, so then he wasn't able to do it. So there are some who suggest that Pesach night, with the Afikoman, we act in a tricky fashion because we are remembering here what happened with Yaakov. So I didn't like that idea either, because as we see, Yaakov is very hesitant, and we see that Yaakov, we've talked about this last year, Yaakov gave a tefillah saying that he should not be tainted by the midah of sheker because of this. So Yaakov did this out of necessity, and the sheker part was very much something that he hated, and the idea that we should train our children in a deceitful manner would seem to be the opposite of what Yaakov's whole point was. Question about that?
How do we reconcile that piece of Mrs. Mavaza before, but now he's super upset that he didn't.
It's a fair question. I just want to finish this point, though, because it's a little bit complicated. So that's what we said about the Afikoman, and I certainly stand by that. But in terms of the reference of Afikoman and Mirma, so there is a Medrash Pliya, that Medrash Pliya says, B'mirma v'chachmas taraso, and v'yikach es birchascha, Hotzi Afikoman v'hirelo. He took out the Afikoman and he showed it. So there's an interesting interpretation of this in the Sefer Mishnah Sachir. The Mishnah Sachir, who we'll mention again in a few minutes, so just to realize who he was, Mishnah Sachir was the author of the Eim HaBanim Smecha. If you're familiar with that Sefer, a classic modern work on Zionism. It was written by an originally anti-Zionist Hasidic Talmud Chacham, Rav Teichtal, who, after the Holocaust, changed his mind. So in his Sefer on Chumash, he is author of Shalos and Chuvas as well, who's the big Talmud Chacham, so in his Sefer on Chumash, so he writes that the deal was always supposed to be that Yaakov gets Olam Haba and Esav gets Olam Hazeh. So Esav is saying, so what's the deal? Why does Yaakov need the brachos? Let him just be happy with his Olam Haba. So Yitzchak's answer is that Achicha ba b'mirma b'chachmas toraso, that he comes only to get the gashmias to the extent that he needs it to understand the Torah, to the extent that one complements the other. So Esau says, I still don't accept that. Let him be totally ruchni. What does he need the gashmias for at all? So then he showed him the Afikoman. So he writes that the Afikoman is symbolic of the Sudas Leviathan, in the sense that it's the meal that comes at the end. He says, at that point, the Sudas Leviathan, so then we'll be able to transition to pure spirituality. But until then, we need the Gashmias to understand and to appreciate the Torah. So with that perspective, that's how Yaakov came, and that was his role here. So here you have a great disappointment on the part of Esav. It says, Vayomer hachi kara shmo Yaakov. Oh, I guess it's appropriate that his name is Yaakov, because v'yakveini zefamayim. So now twice he has taken from me. Es b'charasi lakach. He took the b'chara, and as Noah was pointing out, here it's more relevant, the fact that he seemed okay with it then. He didn't seem to properly value it at the time, but now he says, oh, I was scammed. I was cheated out of my b'chora. V'hinei ata lakach b'rchasi. And now he's taking the bracha. It's really the same thing, right? But now he's taking them away from me. V'yomer halo atzalta li bracha. So then he says to Yaakov, to Yitzchak, Yitzchak, did you not save anything for me? So this whole accusation, again, this is one of the major themes here, but now referring back to the first time, which is definitely outside our scope because it's the first Aliyah, But again, it's something we've spoken about in the past, but I would recommend as a Mara Mukum, if you want to see a nice essay about this, about explaining the morality of Yaakov's actions at both stages. So there's a wonderful article, if I may say so myself, by my Rabbi, Rabbi Aaron Levine, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who wrote an article for the first volume of Mitocha Ohel, this week's Parsha, Parsha's Toldos. Good reading anyway. It's good Torah Mada reading. It's about the theme of the bilateral monopoly and its role in understanding Parsha's Toldos. So if you have access to that volume, I would certainly recommend reading his essay, which gives a different perspective as to both these episodes, which Esav is referring to here. So, Vayan Yitzchak Vayomer LeEsav, Hein Gvir Samti Vlach V'yes Kalechav, Nasati Lo La'avadim V'dagon V'sirosh Shmachtiv U'lecha Ifo Ma'aseh B'ni. So this isn't really cheering him up, he says. But yeah, funny thing. So actually, I gave Yaakov everything good in this world, and I got nothing left for you. So Rav Hirsch comments here also, this phrase, Hein Gvir Samti Vlach. So before we said that it was a challenge that he was saying to Esav, but here, now that he knows that it was said to Yaakov, so he was saying it's not a challenge, this is definitely going to be the case, that he is going to be the spiritual master, and that's the nature of things. And Vayomer Esav Elaviv, HaBracha Achas Hi L'cha Avi, you only have one bracha? So Baracheni Gamani Avi V'yisa Esav Kolo V'yevk. So he asked for bracha also, and he lifts his voice and he cries. Now this idea of habracha achas hilucha, so that's really one of the central questions that we try to understand in this whole aliyah, right? The idea that the bracha is so limited, that he used up the bracha on Yaakov. So that itself is something that challenges us just to understand the mystical power of the bracha, the idea that it can't be given twice. But it's also here, sounds like it has a dual meaning. One is that, why can't you just give me the same bracha that you gave him? Is it only one per blesser? You can't give to anyone else? Why can't I receive this too? But also, we could read HaBracha Achas, you only have one, meaning like however many people you give the bracha to, is it just one standard bracha? Remember once I went to visit a well-known Gadol, and I had a question, and people in front of me were asking for brachas. So I didn't ask him for a bracha, because when I asked my question, when he finished, he said, bracha v'hatzlacha. And I noticed that all the people in front of me, when they came up asking for brachas, he says, bracha v'hatzlacha, bracha v'hatzlacha. So he has one standard bracha. And it's the same bracha they got when they asked for a bracha, he gave when he finished answering my question. So when you say ha-bracha achas, you have one bracha, you could also mean, is there only one type of bracha you can give, no matter who you're speaking to? So it a little bit sounds like that, right? Because the next pasuk is kind of similar. So v'yan Yitzchak Aviv v'yomer elav, hinei mishmanei haaretz, yiyeh moshavecha, umital ha-shamayim me'al. That there is a lot of similar imagery. But again, like we said before, it's not referencing God. And here Rav Hirsch has another focus, that it's not going to seem supernatural, that it'll have physical bracha, but the bracha is going to be in the natural way. It's not going to have the degree and the impact on somebody seeing this to say, wow, this is really something that's above and beyond. And he goes on to say, which will be surprising, Al-Khar b'chasichya, v'yas achicha tavor v'haya kasher tarir ufarak tu'ulo me'al tzavarecha. So you shall live by your sword, and you shall serve your brother, and when you shall be on top, you shall break the yoke from his neck. So here, there's a lot to figure out. Why exactly the sword is a bracha? So some suggest that's because that was Esau's perspective of might makes right. The others point out that he was a hunter, so it just means you'll be successful in your profession. This idea of kasher tarid, there's a lot to say about this. This idea that the Jews are going to eventually have a hard time and you're going to increase that. Why is Yitzchak telling him this? So if you're interested, we're a little bit short on time, but to take a look at Yaakov Kamenetsky in his commentary on Chumash, and Emes Yaakov has a few pages about this, explaining about how this is really the kind of experience that allows the Jewish people to purify itself and to rise up to its true potential, and that's what Esau is being told he's going to have a part of. So So Vayistom Esav es Yaakov al habracha asher berachu aviv vayomer Esav belibo yikruvu yimei evil avi vahaga es Yaakov achi. So here Esav is very upset in this language Vayistom to mean anger. It's not such a common word. So Rav Hirsch has a comment here that this refers to like stima, something which is sealed. That the idea is the anger is all pent up, and that the imagery is like Natira. Natira means to bear a grudge, because you are protecting something, you're keeping something inside, and that's what the Torah specifically prohibits. So here as well, this is meant to have the same type of connotation. And he has a plan. He said, okay, I'll wait till Yitzchak dies, and then I will kill him. So that's a little surprising, not because of the anger towards Yaakov, but supposedly Esav was the hero of Kibarav. So how come here he's just waiting for him to be out of the picture, and he's going to act in a way that he would certainly disapprove of? So here is some of the Svar note. I think Rav Hirsch has this comment as well, that yes, Kibud Av is important, but it's together with Mora Avim, and the real test is Mora, because Kibud generally we get to do when the parents are alive. Mora has an equal impact even after the parents are no longer alive. And the fact that one like Esav can just say, okay, as soon as he's out of the picture, I'm going to forget about him, that shows that it was really only skin deep, and that the actual proper attitude towards his father he never really had. So this idea that he's upset because of the bracha, Rav Hirsch also comments that it's not exactly clear what he means. Does he mean that the bracha that was given to Yaakov, or does he mean the bracha that was given to him? Because the bracha that was given to him also makes it clear that he is going to be second to Yaakov. So one of these brachos made him upset. Maybe it's a both of these brachos made him upset. That's the point that Rav Hirsch makes here. Okay, so following this, what happens? Vayugad l'Rivka is divrei Esav b'noha gadol, v'tishlach v'tikrol Yaakov b'noha katan, v'tomer elav hinei Esav achicha misnachem l'cha l'hargecha. So this was told to Rivka, and Rivka passes it on to Yaakov. And this is one of the places where Rav Hirsch comments that you see that my theory, says the theory that he mentioned that we made reference to before about what was going on here, Rav Hirsch says, you see how this is true, that first of all, they still speak in sympathetic tones towards Esav, he's your brother, he's her son, that they still relate to him as a family member, while normally in the aftermath of something like this, you would expect that people who have essentially struck a blow against somebody will tell themselves, oh, he was terrible, he deserved it, don't feel bad about this. So the idea they focus on his kinship is a way to show that they felt this was necessary, but it didn't come from any type of negative midah. And we'll see going on that Yaakov doesn't exploit the brachas at all. Yaakov still walks out of there penniless, and that was a part of what essentially had to be the message, that this was not about material gain for Yaakov, and that this was something that they felt was necessary for Klal Yisrael. So that all comes out of the way you find the discussion taking place here as well. And it continues, V'ata v'ni shma b'koli v'kom b'rach l'cha elavan achi charona. So you, my son Yaakov, you have to listen to me, you have to get out of here and run towards Lavan. V'yashav ta'imo yomim achadim ad asher toshuv chamas achicha. So you see she has a lot of faith though in Esav. This is what the commentaries point out also, that she thinks he's eventually going to get over it, and that he'll get over it completely. That Toshuv means that he'll be without any type of anger against you. And Achadim, Rashi tells us here from Unklos, means Muatim, just a few days. So it really makes it sound like she thinks that this is going to blow over, and blow over completely, and blow over soon. That's a big Dam L'chatzchus on him. Ad shuv afachicha mimcha, v'shacha achesa asher asiso lo, v'shalachti ulkachticha misham, lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad. So this theme continues into this pasuk. You'll hopefully forget about it completely, and then I'll be able to bring you back home. But to get caught here now, when he's on the warpath, why should I lose both sons in one day? And why does she mean lose both sons? Because presumably if it's going to be a war between the two of them, so one will die and the other will be the killer, and the killer also is not going to have much of a relationship with her. Now the Gemara in Sota, which Rashi quotes, tells us that this nevuah of Lama Eshkol Gam Shnechem Yom Echad eventually does happen, because when it comes time for Yaakov's funeral, so Esav gets in the way. Esav doesn't want to let it happen, and the Tartanima comments that he wanted to make a claim on Maris Machpel himself. That's a part of the fight over the brachos. And Chushim, the son of Dan, who Chazal tell us was deaf, he couldn't really hear what was going on, but he saw that his father's kavod was being harmed. This is a topic of a whole sicha of Chaim Shmulevitz. So he took out the shovel and he basically killed Esav with it. So essentially, Yaakov and Esav don't actually die on the same day, but they're buried the same day. So we see that her nevuah comes true. And the Torah Tumim comments, it's not really nevuah. She didn't say that this is going to happen. She said that why should that happen? And apparently this is a reflection of the idea that we have of Al Tiftach Pelasatin and Bris Kruso Besosayim, that we try not to even mention things that are terrible, things that would have a bad conclusion, because who knows, especially Tzadik is doing the talking, who knows what kind of an impact that could have, and sometimes it ends up coming true. So here, Rav Hirsch comments as well in this next pasuk that this also shows Rivka's feeling towards the situation. But Tomer Rivka Yitzchak Katzti v'chayayim b'nei b'nos cheis emokeach Yaakov Yishon b'nos cheis ka'ele b'nos ha'aretz lama lichayim. So she gets very emotional, and she says she doesn't want Yaakov marrying any of the girls from around here. Again, this parallels last week's parasha, and she says, I don't like the b'nos cheis. I'm disgusted from these daughters of Ches. So this came up about 70, 80 years ago, or a little less than that, if you're familiar. So there was a great Talmud Chacham in Brooklyn by the name of Rav Moshe Bick. This is probably more recently than that, actually. I don't know, a couple decades ago. So Rav Moshe Bick was a prominent Talmud Chacham, and he made a recommendation that was considered very radical, was considered way too liberal. And he said that as opposed to the situation where men and women would just meet each other very briefly before getting married, he said you have to get to know each other a little bit better. And he had this radical suggestion that you should go out 8 times before getting married. It was considered to be very liberal, so much so that the Satmar Rav expressed his great opposition to this idea. How could you say such a princess to go out so many times, 8 times? And he said, "Katzti b'chayai mipnei b'nos ches," that I am disgusted by these girls that go out 8 times b'nos ches. That's Satmar Rebbe had a certain sense of humor, a certain facility with puns. He always had a pasuk somehow that described exactly what he was upset about. So he said, "Katzi b'chayayim b'nei b'nos ches." These girls who are such liberals, they go out 8 times. I find that disgusting. So Rav Bick responded to the Satmar Rebbe. He said that with all due respect, you're a Masadar Kedushin, I'm a Masadar Gittin. That you get to see them at the wedding. You think everything's happy. I see them when it doesn't work out so well. So I can tell you from my experience that you have to think a little bit better, a bit more. So this pasuk was at the center of that pretty fierce debate. Okay, so here there's now another bracha to Yaakov. This time it was with full awareness. Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, vayivarech oso, vayitzaveyu, vayomelo, lo stikach isha, mibnos kran. So Yitzchak gives him instructions, but it's phrased, he gives him a bracha. So apparently, as we see from the psukim coming after this, there's a bracha here involved as well. And there is a fascinating comment here from the Mishnah Sachir, who, maybe we'll close with this, we'll just read the psukim and then come back and say this. So the text then goes on to say, Kum lech padena aram, besa b'suel, avi imecha, v'kach lecha misha, misha, mipnos lava, nachi imecha, go find a wife from there. V'kel shakayi varechoscha v'yafrecha v'yarbecha v'hayisol kalamim, and you will be fruitful and you will have many descendants. V'yitem l'cha as birchas Avram l'cha ulezaracha itach l'rishtacha as eretz megorecha asher nosan elokim le'Avram. So here it's really stated out that these brachos that I received from Avram, they should be passed on to you. And now, to close off the Aliyah, it's all said, you see the whole arc of what happens in this Aliyah. First, the bracha is given under misleading pretenses. Then there's the whole reaction of Esav and Rivka's comments back to Yaakov. And then the Aliyah ends with the same way it starts, with Yaakov getting the bracha from Yitzchak, but now he's getting it with full awareness. And the Mishnah Sacher, again, remember that's Rav Teichtal, the author of the Imavanim Smecha. So he has a whole little drasha on this pasuk, where he says that it is happening, I assume he was talking about during the Holocaust, he was hiding from Nazis, sitting on the roof, and trying to not be seen. And he saw that not only were they doing everything that they were doing, but even the small rations that were there for the Jewish people, they were taking the rations and eating them themselves, and not letting the Jews have even the tiny amount that was supposed to be given to them. And he comments, he said he had at that time, he thought about these psukim, and that he said, really what you see is that Yaakov was always supposed to get a bracha from Yitzchak. Yitzchak had always planned on giving Yaakov brachos, like we see at the end of the Aliyah here. It's just that he had planned on giving a bracha to Esau first, and then to Yaakov. And for some reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan had to be that even during Esau's time, through Mirma, through however you want to characterize it, the bracha had to be snatched away from Esau and given to Yaakov, even though Yaakov would have gotten the bracha eventually anyway. And he comments that this is the spirit of what we saw at the beginning of the Aliyah, the Vilna Gaon's comment that all of Jewish history is guided by this encounter, by this episode with the brachos. So he comments that, yes, Yaakov and his descendants were supposed to flourish, but the concern was, what about these times when Yad Esav Tkifa, when Esav is going to have the upper hand, and he's going to be persecuting the Jewish people, what's going to protect the Jews then? And it dawned on him, as he's sitting there on the roof, he said that this idea that Yaakov got the bracha during Esau's slot, so to speak, that the image is that even when it's Esau's turn, even when Esau is on top, and he's not even giving the Jews the rations of bread they're supposed to get, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still going to protect, is still going to bring them through in a general sense, through those experiences, and he says that that's one of the outcomes of this idea that even during Esau's slot, the bracha was given to Yaakov and his descendants. So there's a lot to say, as you see in this Aliyah, a very challenging Aliyah in many ways, but a lot for us to think about over Shabbos. So we'll have what to reflect upon, and God willing, I will see you all Monday morning. So, who would like to adopt for us? Morning, if you have,